Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Ryan Holiday as we talk about manipulating the media, getting your thoughts on that conspiracy, what conspiracy theories are out there that you think could or could not be true. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Our final hour with Ryan Holiday as we talk about manipulating the media and, of course, conspiracies that continue to abound. Do you think that some conspiracies are formed on purpose to try to manipulate people?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's almost as if you could say there are sometimes conspiracies to create conspiracy theories, which distract and confuse and sow doubts in people. So yes, I would certainly say so. And you could argue that is what happened during the 2016 election. Russia didn't necessarily care what theories were advanced one way or another, but they wanted people to be divided and confused and rife with tension about all these different things. So whether it was that Hillary was sick, or whether it was something that showed that she was doing this or that, or that Donald Trump was doing this or that, the conspiracy there was simply to divide particularly far left or far right leaning individuals away from their candidates.
Tomorrow night, we've got an expert on Russia who's going to try to shed some light for us on this topic to see what Russia did or did not do. I mean, if they didn't think Hillary Clinton would be the candidate that they could get along with, does that make what they did make sense on their end?
I think one argument might be that they didn't actually care who won either way. But what they wanted was that the process to be as bitter and divisive and costly as possible for the country. And so by that definition, you could say they overwhelmingly succeeded. If perhaps they specifically favored one candidate over another, it might be said to be even more successful.
But what did they do that broke the law?
I guess it would be international law in the sense that one country is not supposed to interfere with the democratic process or within the borders of another country. Mostly what they did was not only within the law, but within even the terms of service of a platform like Facebook or Twitter, they were creating trolls, creating fake accounts, and
fake news.
Yeah, and then using those accounts to push fake news stories, because people are not that good at differentiating between a totally legitimate story and an illegitimate story. And, in the Facebook news feed, a story from CNN looks identical to a site from CNNN or, some made-up website that's pushing a theory that, the Pope endorsed Donald Trump, or that, Hillary Clinton admitted to doing this or that.
Yeah.
And if you see these things enough times and they're being specifically targeted at you because you have expressed this predilection or you live in this important swing county, it starts to affect your beliefs.
Should we go back to the days where we just had newspapers, radio, and television, and that's it?
Well, I would say that those days were rife with manipulation as well. Walter Winchell, when he was the dominant newspaper columnist in the United States, the New Yorker fact-checked him, and they found that something like 60% of the items in his gossip column were found to be untrue. So media manipulation goes, back to the invention of newspapers. But I would say that social media has opened up the floodgates for this kind of manipulation on a scale that we're just ill-prepared to deal with.
He had a following, when he would go on the radio and, hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, people would listen to him.
At some point, he was listened to by, I think, close to a third of the entire adult population.
Truly remarkable. Right. The one person that I would say did not try to manipulate people was Walter Cronkite.
Yes. Yes, and that was real power, right? To be the sort of most trusted, literally the most trusted name in news, to be sort of seen as a filter or as a conduit for the people. And I think in some ways the media has lost that, right? Walter Cronkite, at least I think, honestly tried to give people the truth. You know, now anchors make their reputation, whether they're on the left or the right, telling people what they want to hear.
Right, exactly. And you have factions now where, you know, if you want liberal news, you'll go to a different network. If you want conservative, you'll go to a different network.
Well, and I talk about this in Trusty Online, you know, the way that the left manipulates its base is identical to how the right manipulates its base. And both factions are constantly outraged, you know, incredibly cynical. They expect the worst. But they're both getting the same play in a slightly different, you know, they're hearing the same notes in slightly different volumes or whatever. That it both are being whipped up into a frenzy by partisan groups and partisan media manipulators. And I think the scariest part is that often this manipulation is done by the media itself, because the media is a business, right? It although it purports to believe in truth and justice and fairness and objectivity, at the end of the day, what they really care about are advertising dollars.
You got it. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Sunland, California. Monique, to get things started. Hi, Monique. Welcome to the show.
Hi. You are like a beacon of light in this universe, George. Your show.
Oh, thank you. We try. We try.
I know. I've been listening for 32 years, and, you know, you just came on and you've taken the show to a different level.
What were you, 2 years old when you started?
I was 12.
Okay.
Anyway, Brian, and you were talking earlier about marketing, and, you know, it truly bothers me that there are a lot of great people that love communications and entertainment, but unfortunately they get tied up in this web where they have to abide to the bosses, to the almighty dollar, and they might not agree with marketing something, you know, like, for instance, like these energy drinks, you know, this taurine and the energy drinks, it's so bad for the body, yet it keeps being advertised and whatnot. You know, in the military, I just found out if you are opposed to a war, you can actually get out of the military. So my question to you is, if you have integrity and you're in this business, like, shouldn't there be some sort of rules or rewards, even, that if you want to opt out of marketing something that you know is bad for the public, that, you know, you're not going to be hurt economically as an individual? I mean, I kind of feel it's almost the responsibility of the individuals in the business to stand strong, and that's the only way that we can change this around. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay. Well, I think you raise a good point, sort of a conscientious objector status for marketers. I mean, one of the perils of marketing, and I've seen this, you know, with my own company, and one of the reasons I wrote Trust Me, I'm Lying was a response to this, is that, you know, you start a company and you hire your first employee and your next employee, and things are going well, and you're working on clients that you believe in, and then soon enough you've got rent on a building you've got to pay, and you've got these salaries to pay, and you've got, you know, you're paying for this database and that database, and all of a sudden your monthly costs are such that when a bank or, you know, some institution comes along and says, hey, we want to pay you $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 a month to represent our business, it's very hard for those people to say, you know what, I don't believe in what you're selling, especially if you're a good marketer, right? The joke is that, you know, a marketer can sell anything, or could sell a ham sandwich, or, you know, a ham sandwich is pretty good, but you get my point. We say that a marketer can market anything, and so it requires a sort of an inner strength, and we all make mistakes, but it requires an ability to go, look, I'm only going to represent things that I believe in, because with power comes responsibility, and marketing is a form of power.
Yeah, sure is. Okay, next up, let's go to Andy in Toronto. Welcome to the show. Hi, Andy.
Hi, George. Boy, great guest this hour. The
sure
last
is.
Hour, conspiracy came up, and specifically end-of-the-world conspiracy, which I think is sort of the macro big one that's out there. We could talk about political conspiracies, but what came up there was St. Malachi's prophecy of the popes. And if anybody's actually studied that, George, they understand how vague the second half of that is. It's an unproven alleged private revelation that it appeared on the scene about 400 years after St. Malachi died. And so when you examine it, the first half seems to align fairly well with not all, but some of the popes of the past. But then once you reach to the end of the 16th century where this thing appeared, everything going forward tends to be extremely vague or more vague. And again, the big thing that happens here is you've got these fundamentalist protesting Christian groups, which tend to be fringe groups, seizing upon this because, of course, they attribute everything evil to the Catholic Church, and they want to say that the Pope is the whore of Babylon, this, that, and the other, and they grab on it, and they say, see, we're going to see in the end times that the last Pope coming, he's actually on the devil's side, and this prophecy proclaims it, and so it's another one of these things. The key thing here is that I call them the bad news gospel preachers, George, because what they're actually doing is they're instilling fear into their believers and people that are sort of sitting on the fence. And they all jump forward and they say, yeah, we got to believe what this guy says. And what you end up happening is also creating these other groups that figure, well, yeah, that's proof that the end of the world is coming. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to drink the Kool-Aid and die. We're going to commit suicide. And we've seen that a couple times.
Jonestown. Yep.
So it's not a good thing, George, because this is definitely a conspiracy.
Well, we were opposed to a guy named Harold Camping. You might remember that story, Andy, who convinced everybody that the second coming was here to cash in everything they owned. It was unbelievable, and of course, it never happened. And he has died on just because he got old and died away. But some of these are dangerous, Ryan, aren't they?
Yeah, and fear is often what a lot of these theories exploit, or that's the lever that they pull. You know, people, as you said, people are worried it's the end times, and so they should do this and that. It's when you're staring at your mortality, or you're staring at this, you know, threatened crisis or that threatened crisis, that you sometimes throw logic out the window and you can make rash and emotional decisions that, you know, exploitative or manipulative people can take advantage of. And you know, we've been predicting the end of the world since probably the beginning of the world, and so you want to be skeptical of what people are selling on the back of certain prophecies, I would imagine.
Next up, let's go to Joel, Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hey, Ryan, I have two questions. Main one is on YouTube, but you know, would you have recommendations how to get the most out of the YouTube venue, and possibly for also, you know, is it hard to make a YouTube video, and what do people that are more, you know, the common person try and use the YouTube video for in terms of making a YouTube video? And did you foresee this explosion of the video online as, you know, where you get like maybe, you know, a quarter of a billion hits on some of these music videos? And my second question would just be on podcasts, which is really seemingly exploding. And I think it's good because then you can listen to it at your convenience and maybe listen to it two or three times.
Well, I'll take the second part first. I think podcasts are one of the few mediums that I think make me a little bit optimistic about media right now. You know, a podcast, even this conversation, is sort of slow and deliberate. It's two people or three people having a long conversation. It's not sort of subject to these crazy sort of let's go viral, how can we get the most clicks kind of a thing. I think we need more sort of thoughtful conversations with, you know, less flashing banner ads in front of them. And so I think podcasts are great. I think it's a great way to get information. I think, you know, people who are adding to the conversation should seek out good shows, should be guests on them, maybe even make their own show. As far as YouTube is concerned, I mean, look, this is an incredibly powerful medium. I think more, you know, every second, you know, hundreds of hours of footage are added to YouTube. So in the aggregate, that's great. If you're trying to stand out, there's a lot of competition. So So I think it's important to remember, if you're starting a YouTube channel, you're thinking about trying to get a message out on YouTube, is, you know, there's a lot of noise, and standing out amidst that noise is difficult. So you've got to have something very unique, very different that you're saying, something that people are going to seek out. You know, it's important to remember, YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. So people are going on YouTube and looking for things. And so maybe instead of, you know, trying to make what you want to make, you know, it's stepping back and going, what do people need? What are they looking for? What are they not getting? And there's probably an opportunity to build an audience that way.
I think so, too. Let's go to one more call before the break, and then we'll come back with final calls. Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hello there, sir.
Hello there, George and Mr. Ryan Holiday. I told Tommy this is my conspiracy theory. The FBI has been letting us down, and I'm the God, Guns, and Gold man, Mr. Ryan, and the Bible, Bullets, and Beans man. So that's my little take. But the FBI has been letting us down and stuff. You can see with that guy that just killed all them people over there in Florida and these other incidents, and it seems like to me they want to take our guns. So that's my conspiracy theory. God bless y'all. Have a nice night.
Well, I live in Texas. I'm a hunter. I'm generally pro-gun. I don't know if people are trying to take them to me from me. I appreciate my Second Amendment rights. Certainly, I think that the FBI has the best of intentions, but there's no question that there has been a number of news stories that from the James Comey letter, to the handling of the Clinton investigation, to their failures in Florida. There's been a number of things that give us pause. I guess the question is always with these things: is it a conspiracy? Is it a deliberate attempt, or is it something more alarming, which might be incompetence or dysfunction or chaos? And I'm frankly, at this point, not sure what's the scarier answer. Is it that the FBI is acting with bad intent, or is it the FBI is out of control and not operating really with any strong leadership? Either one of those answers is alarming.
I'm a concealed weapons permit holder, Ryan, but, you know, at the same time, I can understand the pain and suffering that a parent has gone through. If they've lost a child, that they would want all guns just taken off and done away with.
Yeah,
I can understand how they feel.
Yeah, and you know, it's important we don't conflate things. You know, the guy that did the school shooting, he was not a concealed weapons permit holder, and given his background, almost certainly would not have passed such a test, and you know, perhaps if he'd applied, the FBI might have woken up.
Flagged him a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see nothing wrong with raising the semi-automatic assault type rifle ban from 18 to 21. I don't see anything wrong with that at all. We're going to come back and take final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to our final segment. Ryan Holiday with us as we talk about conspiracies and, of course, media manipulation as well. In terms of manipulating the media, in some cases, they have to be a willing participant, don't you think?
Well, of course. I think that's the most alarming thing, right? We know that there's publicists or marketers who are trying to manipulate the news. But what we don't realize is the incentives for clicks and page views and the way that they're paid for these page views, drives the media to in some ways manipulate itself. And one of the things that Peter Thiel responded to that made him set out to destroy Gawker, as I write about in Conspiracy, is that they were so craven and brazen in their pursuit of this traffic that they were willing to essentially publish anything and say anything, even things that, you know, are more or less beyond the pale. And so it's important to realize that the media is not necessarily your friend.
Let's go next to the calls. We'll go to Medford, Oregon. Linda Maria is with us. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. Good morning, Ryan. This is an excellent show.
Thank you.
What I'm concerned about is I don't think the media is understanding that they give so much publicity to these mass murderers that they're inspiring potential murders as well.
That's a great point. There's a group of mothers. I'm forgetting the exact name of their group. I interviewed them for a media column I have for the New York Observer. But basically, it's a group of moms. I believe some of their children were killed in the terrible Aurora shooting in Colorado. And basically, their contention is that the media should black out the names of these mass shooters. What they desperately want is to be famous. Of course, if someone kills a bunch of people, that is news. But there's no reason that we have to make this shooter a celebrity. You know, we black out the names of rape victims. Perhaps we should also black out the names of these horrible terrorists, these mass murderers, and not give them the satisfaction of knowing that history will remember their name. And I think this would create I don't think this would stop the problem. I don't think it would even necessarily have an enormous impact, but it would have some impact. And at this point, I feel like we should do everything we can.
Problem with that too, Ryan, is you've got to get all media outlets to agree to the same thing. And that's nearly impossible.
Yes. And one of the stories I talk about in Trust Me, I'm Lying is Terry Jones, the extremist pastor in Florida who committed it many years ago to burn the Quran. The media agreed to a blackout. They knew he was manipulating them for their attention, but one outlet ignored the ban. They gave him the attention. It created this international fury, and you know, a bunch of people were killed in riots in Afghanistan at that time. And so, yeah, it's the problem is if there isn't a system for self-policing inside the media, all of these things are for naught.
I'm an old-time news director, and we sometimes would send television crews to cover demonstrations and pickets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got the idea that a lot of these demonstrators merely wanted television coverage.
Sure.
They didn't even want to be out there protesting and picketing. It was too cold. So, I would send two crews, one to shoot the pickets, the other to hide and shoot the pickets leaving after the first crew left. And almost all the time, when we got there, they would start picketing and chanting, and we'd be videotaping, and then we left. And when they saw that we were gone, they left. And that's when my other crew took those pictures.
Well, yeah, that's sort of what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It's so much of these things that happen that we see reported on for the news really happened exclusively for the benefit of the news. And so we think we're living in reality when in some ways we're almost living in a reality show that is performing constantly for the cameras or for the bloggers or for the social media chatter. And it sort of makes you question everything that's happening around you.
Tom in Riverside, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Good morning, George. And
morning.
I wanted to bring up, is from an American point of view, because I live in this country, born in it, and I've never left, set foot out of it. The two biggest conspiracies, the 9/11 and Kennedy assassination, probably had the biggest effect on me personally and probably most people in this country. And the social problems that are being brought about because of these shootings, I think is mainly it's an indication that something's wrong with our country. You know, it's not guns. Guns are very much a part of this country if you're an American. It's the Second Amendment, and when those revolutionary soldiers went back, they put their life on the line. Many of them didn't come back. They walked back to their homes, through their farms, and they felt that they had given the future generations a tremendous gift. And I'm one of the recipients, and a lot of other people in this country are. A lot of people that come to this country don't really know the history or care about it. They're not part of that, and I think that it's getting lost. And that's part of what the conspiracy we're being steered in a certain direction. As far as these conspiracies go, are they over? That's one question I want to ask you, Ryan. Do you think they're over, or do you think they're continuing? Do you think we are part of that continuing conspiracy? Because I think we're all playing a part in it. And the biggest thing here is why isn't they being investigated now by our politicians? We're always supposed to be vigilant. We grew up with that from grade school. Always be vigilant, always question authority. That was a mainstay in the upbringing 50 years ago. I don't think it would be today. And another problem I have with this word diversity. It's become this drumbeat for this new age. Somehow, we're supposed to have certain numbers of certain people in the colleges, in the jobs, and everywhere. But that's not America. That's not the America I grew up in.
Well, it's not the America a lot of people grew up in, but I don't think, answering his question, Ryan, conspiracies will ever be over.
No, I don't think so. You know, he raised a good and interesting point about, you know, the Kennedy assassination, 9/11 being the ones that most affect our lives. You know, historically, probably the most significant conspiracy in American history is the conspiracy to assassinate Lincoln, which was not just Lincoln, but they attempted to assassinate the other members of his cabinet, and they only barely survived. But the entire history of the United States pivots in this moment. You know, Reconstruction goes horribly awry. The Civil War comes to a less sort of forgiving and merciful close. And we live in that world, right? A single individual radically changed the course of American history with an assassin's bullet in a theater. And so we live constantly in the shadows of these conspiracies, and they change the world that we live in. They're not going away. Absolutely not. I mean, the events of the Peter Thiel and Gawker conspiracy, which I wrote about here, you know, they started in 2007. And the jury verdict ended in March of 2016, and the events are the aftermath is still being worked out, you know, sort of right before our eyes. And so we're reeling from a potential conspiracy.
A 9-year trial.
Not a 9-year conspiracy. It was incredible. It's nearly unbelievable. And so I think if anything, we may even be seeing a resurgence of these kinds of things as Silicon Valley floods the world with billions of dollars and massive amounts of influence over our culture. I think we're going to see more of these things.
Dan in Alaska, first-time caller. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes. Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Thank you, Dan.
The main conspiracy I was involved in myself in Vietnam, but I didn't call up the talk about that. I want to ask about the gentleman about the 2.5 minutes from the moon landing that they blotted out because there was a UFO there and there was an alien standing behind the spaceship. Originally, they broadcast it. And also, Amagorda, George, I've always been interested in that. That was supposed to be a UFO sighting, and that's when the 1918 flu began, because they said that they claimed that the UFO was there for 3 days, and it spread all this
contamination.
They said it rained, but I don't think it was rain. I think it was some kind of germs or something.
Let me ask you about this, Ryan. Just basically ET and UFO conspiracies.
Yeah, I don't know whether we're alone in the universe or not. I don't know. You know, what's happened and if something has been covered up. But I think it's interesting, this goes to this point of conspiracies versus conspiracy theories, is, you know, the amount of reported UFO sightings
has gone down as the rise of cell phone cameras have gone up. And part of the reason is that, you know, that basically the burden of evidence required to support this conspiracy theory has gone up, and that's reduced the amount of the, you know, reported sightings. And so I think it's interesting. We want to make sure that we're coming at these things from an evidence-based background, and as we were saying earlier, you don't want to get distracted with things that are not true or just sort of divisive or sort of doubt-sowing ideas. And so approaching these things from an evidence, based perspective, from being very scientifically driven, I think is really important to make sure you're not, getting too far off in the weeds.
To Ventura, California we go. Mike is with us. Michael, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good. I hope you are too.
Excellent. So good to talk to you again, and a nice show you got tonight with Ryan.
Yeah, he's doing a great job for us.
Great job. And you know, I've told you about the books I've wrote before, conspiracy books. I've
mm-hmm.
got Where the Eagles Gather. And the follow-up to that one is The Eagle Has Landed. But what I'd really like to talk about tonight is the Thomas Fire, because I think there's a conspiracy there.
What's the conspiracy portion, do you think?
Well, it's the media. Part of it is the media. And homeless issues. When the Thomas Fire started on daytime talk radio.
And this, by the way, for people who don't know, is the big wildfire that just happened several months ago.
Yeah, the biggest wildfire
ever.
In California history.
Yep, ever.
And the hate speech against homeless people for a month or two was just incredible. All I heard about was it was homeless people that started the fire, and they found out it wasn't. And also, there was a lot of people that were made homeless by this fire.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and people in California should remember that homelessness is just an ember away.
Well, let me tell you, we've only got a couple minutes left. You know, part of the problem is, the media doesn't really dig deep. They're video people. They're quick. There's, let's get a picture. Let's do a quick interview. And they don't have the resources to investigate. Most departments don't even have that, as far as police departments. What do you think, Ryan?
No, you're absolutely right. And what happens is that so the fire is happening right now, and people want an explanation right now. And so the media goes with whatever is easiest, whatever sort of floating around there in the ether. And then as they report on it, it becomes true because other people are saying it, and people are hearing it, and people are talking about it. And so we get these sort of runaway narratives, and then when they're later disproven, the media is on to the next thing. And so they can't go out and fix the damage that's been done to the reputation of a group of people, or whether it's homeless people or people of this race or that race or this historic political persuasion or not. They just move on to the next thing, and it's really, and that's why I think we need a lot more caution, a lot more sort of discipline from the media, so they don't jump to these conclusions, because real damage is done when they propagate news that is later, turns out not to be the case.
Yep, about 1,300 structures either damaged or destroyed. It cost $177 million to fight, and 104,000 people had to flee. Not good. Not good at all. I want to thank you, Ryan, for being on the program. You keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, get some sleep out there. And he's in New York. And it's pretty early in the morning out there. Well, stick with us. Tomorrow, Stephen Cohen joins me for the first couple hours to try to shed some light on this Russian conspiracy. Let's see if we can help get to the bottom of it, followed, of course, by more Coast to Coast for you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.